beautiful sunny afternoon across Coventry and Warwickshire, and it really has been, hasn't it, over the bank holiday weekend, whatever it is you've been up to, hopefully enjoying yourself, hopefully not too much to excess, because as we're going to find out over the next hour or so, it's that excess that could shave as much as 15 years off your life expectancy. We're meeting Phil Riley this afternoon, a one-time radio executive turned author. Not the most common career path, but for Phil Riley from Long Itchington, it's certainly for him followed very successfully indeed. He's written a book titled The Life of Riley, which spells out the five lifestyle changes you can make to add significant and enjoyable extra years to your lifespan. He joined me in the studio over the weekend. I began by asking him why he chose to turn his hand to writing this book.
I had an experience in 2013 when a number of friends of mine, three of them, who were all radio people like me, in fact, I think you certainly knew two, if not three of them, died, and they died around the same age as me. I'm 56 now, so I was 54 then. One was 54, one was 59, one was 65. So people of my age dying. And just a month or two before all this happened in a sort of 6-month period, a month or so before that, I myself had had a pretty nasty accident where I'd sliced my arm open, and although this is radio and therefore you can't see it, I'm about to show to Phil my arm.
It's a scary scar, isn't it?
I have a very scary scar on my arm, and I almost died myself. I didn't, and I'm perfectly fine, and my hand works terrific. I've just got a bit of a scar, a bit like the Harry Potter scar on my forearm rather than my forehead.
That's a good six, seven inches long on your left forearm.
So, and I described the accident in the book. It was amusing in hindsight, not at the time. So I'd been given a second chance, and then suddenly these three mates of mine hadn't got a second chance because they'd all died. And I started to think, what is it about some lifestyles that mean some people are dying in their 50s and early 60s and others are going on to their 80s and 90s and nowadays even beyond that? What is it that's causing that? Is it all random, or is it primarily lifestyle related? And if it is lifestyle related, are there things that you can do, no matter what age you might be, that can change your lifestyle and can therefore give you back some of those years that you might be in danger of losing? And the final element of all of that, you know, I was sort of working through these questions, was if you can figure out a way of doing all of that, this is me talking to myself, could I figure out a way of doing that efficiently, i.e. without making my life more miserable than it, you know, needs to be in order to live healthily. People know that they want to live a healthier life. I think most people would say, yeah, if I could make the choice, I want to live a healthier life. I just don't want to make it so painful that it's not worth doing. So all of those things were part of the thinking and the research that I did. And I was starting to do a bit of modelling on what, you know, what the numbers actually meant in terms of where your life expectancy could get if you lived more healthily, and I started to do this research, and I just gradually thought, you know, that there is a book in this, there is something really interesting which I don't think I've seen anywhere else, and in particular I felt the research showed that there were four lifestyle habits that are really bad for you. None of this will come as a shock to anybody listening, but drinking too much too frequently, smoking, being obese, and not being physically active all have a detrimental effect on life expectancy. Big shock there. But
all of which you
all
were
of which I had. I mean, at different periods, I had suffered from all of them. I was obese. I was a smoker. I was still drinking heavily when I was doing the research for the book. That makes it sound as though I was a dipster. I wasn't. I was just doing what many middle-aged men do, I think, which is drinking, you know, too much too frequently, open a bottle of wine and the bottle's gone. And that was most, if not every night of the week.
Wow. Okay.
For a while as well, I was very unfit. I'm quite fit now, as you know. That was one thing that I did address, you know, a while ago. But so all of that, I thought, I've got some personal experience. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a celebrity who's doing My Life Change book.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm just a businessman who's trying to fix something. And actually, if I can fix it in a way that I use my business skills for, that might actually be an angle that people think, actually, that's quite interesting, because he's done that in a very efficient way, in a way where the return on the investment you're making is high, a business jargon.
I was going to say, you've got a very business approach
to this. Yeah, absolutely. I'm a numbers guy, so there are numbers and graphs in the book, but I hope also there's an emotional side to it when I talk about some of the benefits of doing this that will relate to people.
One of the claims of the book, The Life of Riley, mastering the 5 secret habits to enjoy a longer and healthier life, and we will be revealing during this interview what those 5 secret habits are, is that if you follow these habits, you could extend your life by some 15 years. But before we get to that, you start by defining how everybody is one of these five tribes. Just explain the 5 tribes to everybody first.
Yeah, so the first 4 of the 5 tribes pretty much tie in with what I've just said. So if you are a heavy, frequent drinker, you're in tribe 1. Now, that's not a very big tribe. About 6% of men, less than 2% of women would be in that category. They're not alcoholics in the sense that I think we all would imagine in our minds when you mention the word alcoholic. These are, you know, a much larger group of people, about 1.5 million men, maybe 500,000 women in the UK, who just drink too much too frequently. They're drinking a bottle of wine a night or 4 or 5 pints a night, and they're not giving their livers a sufficient rest, and that's a problem. And so it's quite a small group of people. Unfortunately, many of them also smoke. Now, that might be changing over time, but certainly traditionally, these people, about 75-80% of the heavy drinkers also smoked. It might be that they've got an addictive personality or something within them that causes them to do that. And certainly there's a lot of research going on into this twin heavy drinking and smoking. Now, the double whammy of the drinking and the smoking means that this lifestyle group are dying very young.
Yeah.
Life expectancy is sort of late 50s, early 60s for these people. So, you know, that's very young.
Okay.
Tribe 2 I describe as the sober smokers. Now, that's not because they never touch a drink. It's just that they're smokers. They're the vast majority of smokers who haven't sort of fallen into tribe 1. They're not drinking to excess, but they may still enjoy a pint or two. But their main bad habit, if you like, is that they're smokers. Now, smoking on average knocks about a decade off your life. And what you need to know is that today in the UK, if you're an adult, you've got a 50-50 chance of living to about 84. If I knew nothing about you, not even if you were a man or a woman, I'd say, actually, if you're an adult, 84 is the midpoint. Now, that means if you're a smoker, it's about a decade before then. So you're talking mid-70s. Although for the sober smokers, it's probably a little older than that, surprisingly, because the guys that are in Tribe 1, these drinker smokers, well, they're going in their 50s and 60s. Yeah, so the law of averages says they bring the average down. So the sober smokers last a bit longer. In fact, the other thing that happened to me in 2013 was that my mother died, and she was a smoker, and she died of emphysema, and she was age 77. In fact, she was probably almost exactly the age that you would have predicted.
In a
tribe 2.
Yeah.
Tribe 3 are the obese. Now, smoking is almost an either-or. You either are a smoker or you're not. With obesity, it's obviously a range. You know, somebody who's got, now, BMI, the body mass index, which is a sort of measure of how heavy you are, which gets, you know, takes account of whether you're tall or short. That measure, if you have a score of over 30 on that measure, technically you're obese. But if you've got 30.1, you're only just tipping the scales.
Okay.
And so with obesity, it's a much more gradual thing. And for every point over 30, you might be knocking a year or so off your life expectancy. So if you're up at 35, maybe you might be 4 or 5, you're losing 4 or 5 years. But obviously, you know, the bigger the number, the fewer the people there are in that category. And on average, the people who are obese are probably around 33, 34. So they're losing a few years. If it's the only thing that they've got that's a significant problem, it isn't the worst thing. It's not, certainly nowhere near as bad as being in tribe 1, for example.
Yeah, okay.
But you're still running the risk of losing some years and also probably having a tougher time towards the end of your life with, you know, ill health and all the other stuff that goes with, you know, being obese. So that's tribe 3. Tribe 2 is about 17-18% of the population. About 1 in 5 are smokers still, sadly. Tribe 3, the obese, again, about 1 in 5. The biggest tribe is tribe 4. So these are people who haven't done any, you're not doing any of the sort of proactively bad things like drinking and smoking, but they're probably not getting off the couch enough. Yeah. Right? These are your typical, you know, cream cracker at the end of the day. I'm going to go home. I can't be, and I hate Lycra and I don't want to go to the gym. They're just not doing enough exercise. And of course, that's the biggest tribe. About 40%, so two out of every five people sort of sit in that tribe. And sit is probably the right word. And the challenge there is, of course, they get to about the average because they're the biggest lump in the middle, if you like. But they probably have longer in ill health again at the end of their lives because they've not been keeping themselves fit and healthy. They've not been physically active. They're more likely to spend longer at the end of their lives in some form of ill health. And then when you've added up all those four tribes, you're left with about one in five, about 20% of the population, who are in tribe five, who I call the live longers. These are the people that have managed to avoid the bear traps of tribes one, two, three, and four, got themselves into tribe five, so they're relatively slim. They don't need to be perfect weight, but they're relatively slim. They keep take good care of themselves physically in terms of being physically active. They don't drink to excess, so they're moderate drinkers, and they don't smoke. And if you can get all of those things right, you stand a very good chance of getting to your late 80s or even early 90s, certainly on the basis of the ONS numbers, the Office of National Statistics numbers that are published at the moment. So the goal of the book is trying to get you into Tribe 5, because it's a much better place to be than Tribes 1, 2 or 3 in particular.
Phil Riley from Long Itchington, and we'll talk a bit more about his book, The Life of Riley, Mastering the 5 Secret Habits to a Longer Life. Talk a bit more about Body Mass Index and exactly what those 5 secrets are before 4, right here on BBC Coventry and Warwickshire.
20 seconds on the bedtime,
exactly 3:30 on a bank holiday Monday, and Philipton here with you on until 6 o'clock today. We're with Phil Riley from Long Itchington in Warwickshire, a very successful radio executive, but by his 50s, a diet of eating out, drinking, smoking and obesity added to the death of three friends and colleagues who had, you know, access to good healthcare, were educated, all died though a lot earlier than you'd expect to. And now, 7 stones lighter, he's written this book, The Life of Riley, The 5 Secret Habits, which he claims can help you enjoy a longer and healthier life. I spoke to him over the weekend about his book and about his findings and about his equivalent to the Body Mass Index system.
The interesting thing about Body Mass Index, it's a flawed concept. There'll be three types of people listening this afternoon. Those that have never heard of it and didn't know it existed. Those that sort of know it and probably are maybe a bit scared of it because they think, crikey, I've got my numbers too big. And then those that have probably heard a bit more about it and think, yeah, but it's a bit flawed, isn't it? There are things wrong with it. Now, there are things wrong with it. The first thing that's wrong with it, which I discovered, and this is pertinent to me as an individual, is that the formula that we've been using for, and it's, the Body Mass Index has been around for about 150 years, if not longer. The formula that we use has sacrificed accuracy for simplicity. So it's your weight in kilograms divided by your height in meters squared. Now that sounds complicated, but it's not. It's possible to do it with a simple bit of maths if you're reasonably good at maths. The problem with it is if you're very tall or very small, it goes a bit wonky. So it's wonky at the edges. And I discovered for me, for example, because I'm very tall, it gives me too big a number. And in fact, when I was at my heaviest, and we haven't talked about how heavy I was, but we'll get into that. My body mass index, according to the sort of standard formula, was 33. Now, if you recall what I was saying before, points over, that's really worrying. Actually, as it happens, if you apply, there's a new formula called the Trethafan formula, which my website links to. That formula, for very tall people, knocks it down by a point, point and a half, maybe 2 points even. And at the bottom end, it actually adds a bit. So if you're very small and you've got a BMI that's sort of on the borderline, you do the new formula, it might actually push you over. So, maybe that's a bad thing, maybe it's a good thing. But basically, the Trethafan formula works it out a bit more carefully and it doesn't, it doesn't let it go wonky at the edges. So that's the first thing. The second thing about BMI, not to get too complicated about it, is it's a proxy. It's a proxy for how much fat you're carrying. And of course, it was a great proxy 150 years ago, because how the heck would you know? I mean, you could obviously see if people were fat or not, but you wouldn't be able to measure it accurately. So the BMI formula was a way of working out, well, he's, you know, heavier than he is because the formula says so. Nowadays, of course, you can go to any high street chemist or online and buy yourself a set of scales for £20-25 and stand on them, and it will tell you how fat you are. It's got a, you know, it sort of sends this little electrical impulse up you, which you can't feel, but it, and then it pops up and says, you've got 20% body fat or 40% body fat. Now, those two numbers are really interesting because I used to have 40% body fat. I now have less than 20. I think it was at 18.7 this morning.
Wow.
And, you know, that is a, clearly for me, it's a dramatic difference. But, you know, so for me, it's that number that's the more important number rather than BMI. But if people don't want to get on the scales because they're worried about it or whatever, well, at least the BMI thing, you can just plug your height and weight in a calculator and it'll tell you what it is, and that's a, it's a good reference point, and it has some flaws. And if I stood next to James Haskell, the Wasps captain, we would, you know, when I was 40, for example, and I was at my heaviest, we would probably have weighed about the same.
Okay.
But we wouldn't have had the same body BMI. Fat.
Yeah.
But we'd have had the same BMI, but we put it, because he's about as tall as I am, he's 6'3", 6'4". But we'd have had a different body fat because he's all muscle and I was a lot of fat. So that's one of the things that where BMI falls down. Although the truth is, there are not many people like James Haskell out there.
Sure.
There are a lot more people like me.
Let's talk then a little bit about your personal circumstances. You were at your heaviest, over 20 stones.
Yeah.
You're carrying 40% body fat. You're 6'5". You're now, what, 14?
I'm still 6'5".
Yeah.
I'm still 6'5". I'm actually 14, so I weigh myself 14 stone 5 on Friday.
Right. So what does that make your BMI? 20?
22.5.
Okay.
Which
so that's
is
really.
It's perfect.
Really,
yeah,
all
perfect.
Right, okay. So, life expectancy. Which, again, you've used the ONS, the Office of National Statistics, to try to look at this. And you work out in your book that sort of 74, 79, in that sort of window, is people's average life expectancy. Your claim in the book means that not only can you live 15 years longer, but also, one of the key phrases for me that stuck out was that being old, you don't have to be ill and old. And following some of these secrets of yours, not only do you get a longer life, but you get value in
more
that
value
life as well.
Yeah, I think that just to try and separate those numbers out, the average for an adult in the UK, the average, the sort of 50-50 point for all adults living today in the UK, half of us can expect to live beyond 84, half might not get to 84.
Right.
So 84 is this midpoint, this median. And the truth is, if you're in tribes 1, 2 or 3, you're much more likely to be below the 84. And in fact, for those three tribes, the average is, for them is about 75, 76.
Okay.
Some people will live longer into their 80s, but some people might go before them. But so if you're in tribes 1, 2 and 3, you're in your mid-70s to late 70s. If you're in Tribe 5, you're up in the 90s. And that's the 15-year gap I'm saying, suggesting, is get out of Tribes 1, 2 or 3, get into Tribe 5. That's where you get your extra 15 years from. And more than that, the people who are in these first three tribes, as you just said, they're likely to spend longer at the end of their lives in ill health. And that won't come as a surprise to anybody. If you think the people who are in the first three tribes, they may be struggling with, you know, lung-related diseases or heart-related diseases that are in part caused by their lifestyle, they're probably going to spend more time towards the end of their life in and out of the doctors, in and out of hospital. The people who are fit and healthy and moderate drinkers who are in Tribe 5, you know, have just appear to have fewer life health problems, even, you know, quite close to the end. And in fact, you I know, as a cyclist, will be pleased with one of the studies I put in the report. This is a... It was a study of cyclists, but they at the end of the report they said this could equally apply to people who walk every day or swim every day. And in the book I talk about walking rather than cycling. So I think the results of this particular study apply to anybody that's being physically active. And what they did was they looked at a bunch of cyclists from age 55 up to age 80, and they wanted to, they knew for the general population how your faculties declined over time. As you got older, they could, they knew how much these things, you know, these things fell off a cliff, all the health indicators. And they wanted to see whether in cyclists who were keeping themselves fit, whether that decline was ameliorated in any way, whether it was a bit, you know, wasn't quite as sharp a decline. And what they actually found was there was no decline at all. In fact, they could not find, they said, if we did not know how old these people were, we wouldn't have been able to, on the basis of their test scores for health, we wouldn't have been able to rank them according to their age, because the people who were in their 70s were getting as good a score as the people in their 50s. So the evidence there is, if you keep yourself fit and active and healthy on a regular basis, then you know, there just isn't that, that decline only occurs when you stop doing that. So if you can carry on doing it for as long as you can, you'll maintain those benefits.
So just what are those five secret habits that could add to that 15-year lifespan? We'll get Phil Riley to explain after The Life of Riley by The Lightning Seeds. BBC Coventry and Warwickshire Bank Holiday Monday, 22 minutes to full. Minutes to four on BBC Coventry and Warwickshire. So yes, that Life of Riley is the name of the book by Warwickshire man Phil Riley. So just what are those five secret habits to a longer life?
So these are the habits that work for me, and I picked them out of looking at the science and trying to think about what it was that I wanted to do. I think they work for anybody. Clearly, when you sit down and read the book and look at the habits, you're going to think, well, I might have to change that to fit in with my lifestyle. So, you know, these are my habits for my lifestyle, and I think they'd work for anybody, but you may end up thinking, oh, I'll tweak that a bit. But I don't want you to think, well, what he's telling me is I've got to do this absolutely to the letter. So the first habit is to have a healthy breakfast that keeps you feeling fuller for longer. Now, for me, just because it's the easiest thing to do, I have a whole grain, so I have porridge for breakfast. But you could have scrambled egg or something similar to that. What you want to avoid is a, you know, packaged cereal or toast or something that actually makes you feel full the moment you eat it, but 2 or 3 hours later you're hungry again.
Okay.
And that's what these sort of packaged cereals are almost designed to do. They make you want to be hungry.
Give you the immediate satisfaction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you want a breakfast that makes you feel fuller for longer, because habit two, I'm afraid, is I want you to skip lunch. Now that, you know, there'll be some people going, oh no, that can't be right. No. Eat little and often. The people that tell you to eat little and often are normally people who are so super thin that, you know, that they're always, their metabolism is working overtime. They're the people that do need to probably eat little and often. For most of us whose metabolism isn't working quite that fast, actually going longer between meals is a good thing. Not snacking is obviously also a good thing, but going longer between meals is a good thing, because the thing that you want your body to do is to get to a point where it's saying, haven't got any energy from food at the moment, so I need to go and raid my fat reserves. This is if you want to lose weight. Clearly, if you're already super, you know, super lean, then you know, a different approach might be useful for you. But for most people who need to lose weight, and then this is part of what they're trying to do, then you need to go longer between meals. We'll come back to what you do for dinner in a minute, because the third habit, and I was trying to be as efficient as possible here, remember, with all of these. So habit one, simple porridge breakfast. That's easy, that's simple, that's not expensive.
Yeah.
It's right, straightforward to do.
Everyone can do that.
All right. Habit two, don't have lunch. Actually, that's the cheapest option there is, right? There's no cost involved in not having lunch. That's great. Habit three, instead of moping around the canteen at work, go for a walk. Okay, so if I'm telling you not to have lunch, well, here's something you can do instead, which is put a pair of trainers on and go for a walk. A brisk walk.
Yeah, so I'm not talking a stroll here.
A walk where you're out for half an hour, and the goal would be, over time, to be able to actually do maybe 2 miles in half an hour. Now, that's walking. That is really good, fast walking.
Okay.
And certainly, if you've never done it before, you probably wouldn't be able to go at that pace to begin with. But you'll be able to pick up to be getting close to that over time. But a good half an hour's brisk walk every day will, you know, if you do that at least 4 days a week, you will definitely tick the box that says I'm physically active. The thing is, actually, once you're doing it 4 days a week, you'll end up wanting to do it every day, because it becomes mildly addictive walking. But the goal here is get yourself in the frame of being able to do it every day. Now, some people say, can't do that, you've got lunch, you know, other things to do at lunchtime, whatever. Well, great. First thing in the morning, last thing at night, however you can find to do it. It's the simplest form of exercise I think I could possibly recommend to people, but it also has fantastic benefits. And certainly a lot of the research that are evidence that I point to in the book is based on people walking, not people who are putting on Lycra and going riding a bike or going joining a gym. So, you know, the sort of moderate level of exercise that people that don't do anything could easily move up to. So I'm not asking people to go and lift weights. I'm not asking
or
people
spend thousands on spend gym thousands equipment on a gym bike equipment. Or whatever,
I'm just saying, go for a walk 4 days a week. Make it brisk. You know, really put some effort into it. That in and of itself is enough to get you that big tick for, you know, being physically active. So that's habit three. Habit four is when it comes to dinner, you need to eat good, real food. And by that, I mean meat, fish, vegetables, bit of nuts, oils, you know, good, real, healthy food. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because these habits are sort of weekday habits, avoid the carbs.
Yeah.
Okay.
No carbs.
Yeah. Now,
bread,
you know, there's,
bad,
yeah, there's, well, you know, and there's a huge, as we know, there's a huge sort of debate going on at the moment. Wow, low fat versus low carb versus low this versus low that. All I can tell you is, I think on the preponderance of the evidence, an eating regime, if you want to lose weight, that restricts carbohydrates at least part of the week, seems to work pretty well. And there's lots of evidence, lots of peer-reviewed science that says low carbohydrate type approaches have got the edge on the others. I'm not saying that the others wouldn't work if you tried them really well, but certainly for me, the evidence points in the direction of restricting carbohydrates to a degree. Now, remember, I'm not restricting them completely because I'm having flipping porridge for breakfast.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, I'm having some carbs every day, but they're complex carbohydrates, low GI, and they're earlier in the day. But I'm saying for your evening meal, at least 4 days a week, try and restrict them. So, and there I'm talking about the starchy carbs, so rice, pasta, bread, potatoes. It's, you know, I come from an Irish background, so telling people not to eat potatoes is a difficulty for me, but I think it is a benefit. Now, so you recall earlier I said I tried to make these rules as efficient as possible.
Okay.
And one of the things that is, and I talk about this research in the book, is people find it incredibly difficult to stick to diets.
Sure.
Massively difficult. You know, I mean, there's one research which I reference, one piece of research work, which says that for men, it's something like only 1 in 200 men who are obese can get down to a normal weight. Mm. Well, either I'm a miracle, or actually those men that are trying and failing are being given the wrong advice.
Okay.
Maybe they're being told to do it in the wrong way. So it is difficult to get into an eating regime that works and stick with it, which is why I thought when I was developing these habits, you know, I won't be able to stick. I can't stick to anything for 7 days a week,
right,
for weeks and weeks and weeks on end. It's got to be something that I can live with forever. Therefore, I can't, you know, it's got to be something that allows me on a Saturday night to go and have
a bit of room for manoeuvre.
Yeah, steak and chips. You know, if I want some chips with my steak, well, I've got to be allowed to have that. So the habits work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You're allowed a bit more scope. If you want to take the kids out for a pizza, then okay, Friday night, great. So there is some flexibility within the plan. So that's rule four, is a really good,
proper
real
dinner.
Food, proper dinner. You know, and I even have some recipes in
you
the back
do.
Of the book.
Come to those,
isn't
it? Yeah.
And then rule five, and this is the one that everybody sort of goes, sucks their teeth in.
Yeah.
Of course, you know it's coming, which is no booze Monday to Thursday. Now, I'm not convinced that you need to go 4 nights a week without any alcohol at a general level in order to become a moderate drinker. I think, you know, you could do only 2 or 3 nights a week. The reason I suggest 4 nights a week is because these are habits, and I've got these 5 habits, and I'm saying to people, stick with these habits 4 days a week, the boring days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then everything else will be okay at the weekends. And actually, if you stick with them over time, you will gain all the benefits. You'll get into Try Five and it'll all be great. So I'm probably being a bit restrictive in saying don't drink 4 nights a week, but I think it's just part of, here's a set of habits. Get into the habits. If you can get into those habits, it's great. And I know lots of people already would have had, I don't drink on a school night, as one of their habits in life.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
you know, you hear people say that. Yeah. And actually, I'd never adhere to that myself. And I wish I'd thought of it 15 years ago, because I've spent the last 15 years drinking the best part of a bottle of wine every night. I've never felt any the worse for it in the morning. But I bet my liver has, but you can't see your liver. So I think, and that's part of the problem with drinking, is you don't know the effect it's having on you, because it's inside and it's not, you know, until it gets too bad, you don't know. And my take on the advice that comes out, the health advice on drinking, is the most important thing is to give yourself a regular weekly break.
Right.
Whether if you have a drink on a Friday and a Saturday and a Sunday, you go over whatever the limits are. Personally, I don't think that's anywhere near as critical as giving yourself a break every week. If you give yourself a good break every week for 4 or 5 nights, I'm not sure breaking the points total at the weekend is quite so bad. And of course, the thing about the alcohol limits, nobody really, you know, the complexity of human
consumption
means it's never possible to be absolutely certain on anything. And I'm a bit of a skeptic about some of the new numbers. But what I'm not a skeptic about is having said to myself, I'm going to stop drinking Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, as part of a plan which is designed to do a number of things, including losing weight. That's definitely that. You know, not drinking for 4 nights a week definitely helps, you know, with the weight loss, because as everybody knows, you know, the calories in alcohol are empty calories. There's no benefit apart from the joy of the wine or the beer. And but if you can avoid that during the week, that's the fifth habit.
Phil Riley with his 5 secret habits to enjoy a longer and healthier life. The book's called The Life of Riley. Already got a couple of great reactions from you on email. Brian in Leamington says, most sense I've heard on your radio station for a long time. To be honest, it's all pretty much common sense stuff. And the way we live back in the 50s, used to walk to work and back myself and eat more earlier in the day. Jean in Charlesmore, great tips. Made a note of all 5 of the habits. What about these menus that you mentioned? Well, if you actually were to buy the book or get the book from Amazon or on your Kindle reader, what have you, right at the back, they've got a bunch of appendices Phil's put in the back of the book. And Appendix 3, the 4-week food plan. So in there are a bunch of menus that you can spread out over the 4 weeks. And some of them are very simple. I mean, literally, chicken with veggies is menu number 13 down there, roast chicken with veggies. So very simple, very straightforward for you to try and get your head around. There's a website, I know, with some more details on there as well, associated with the book, if you'd like to find out a bit more about it. The Life of Riley, the 5 secret habits to enjoy a longer and healthier life. Phil Riley from Long Eachington, our guest on the programme today.